Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Pipasindhuvayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.
We're supposed to begin speaking about the prayers of Queen Kunti. And what chapter do those prayers take place in? 8th chapter of the first canto. But the section of the Bhagavatam that the prayers of Queen Kunti are within, beginning from chapter 7 and ending at the end of chapter 11, are very special chapters of the Bhagavatam. Because in these chapters, we first become introduced to Krishna, the actions, the activities of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to introduce us to Krishna in a very, very intimate way, because we are meant actually to develop our relationship with Krishna, our loving relationship with Krishna, and to become introduced to Krishna through the Bhagavatam will mean anartha upasamam sakshat bhakti yoga arhokshaje lokasya janato vidvan. People do not know in this world, no one is aware that our artha, that wealth that we are striving for in this world, is actually anartha. It is useless. Rather than useless, it is causing our misery. That which we're attached to in the material world is simply causing us misery. And because the people, lokasya ajanato vidvan, the people don't know this, the great sage Vyasadeva, Chakra Satvita Samhita, he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam to remove, on one hand, all the miseries of the living entity, of every soul in this world, because to be in this world means misery. To remove the miseries, but not simply to remove the miseries, but rather, because that means moksha, liberation, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. This is the four purusharthas. But what Srila Vyasadeva is doing is establishing, he wishes to establish us in the panchama purusharta, prema, pamarto mahan, our love for Krishna, beyond just removing the miseries of this world. Because that too does not satisfy the living entity. It does not satisfy us. We need life. We need love for Krishna. So here, in the 7th chapter of the first canto, we will see Krishna for the first time. We've heard about him. The first verse of the Bhagavatam, beginning with Janmad Yasya Yataha, is Srila Vyasadeva's definition of the Param Satyam, of the Absolute Truth. And there are many ways to translate this verse. Srila Prabhupada has translated it in one wonderful way that brings us to the point of understanding Satyam Param Dhimahi, that we should fully use our life to meditate on the Absolute Truth, who is Krishna. Satyam means Krishna. In the prayers, in the Garbha Stuti, the prayers of the demigods to Krishna when he is in the Garbha, in the womb, there is one wonderful verse, perhaps the first verse in their prayers, that names Krishna as Satya. So Satyam Param Dhimahi means to meditate upon Krishna. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami have described this particular verse in many, many, many other ways. Perhaps Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and three other ways, Jiva Goswami, and two other ways, one that defines Krishna, one Radha and Krishna. Very wonderful explanations. But it defines Krishna. And then in the remainder of the first chapter of the first canto, the sages of Namasharanya who are hearing, they ask six questions to the person who they are hearing from. And who is that? Srila Suta Goswami. And then, to the end of the first canto is there's the words of Suta Goswami, and then at the very, very end of the first canto, Sukadev Goswami appears on the scene to speak instructions to Maharaj Prickett. And in the second chapter, there is a wonderful progression about devotional service. And in the third chapter, we could say it is the most important chapter in the Bhagavatam in one sense. It begins, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam, that describing how the Purusha, that person, that supreme person, he takes on the form of many, many avatars, beginning with the Purusha avatars, and then all the other avatars are described in the third chapter of the first canto. And then finally, after all of the avatars have been mentioned, there is perhaps, it is the verse, Ete Chamsa Kalu Pumsan, that although these avatars, they are all coming from the Purusha, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam, all coming from the Purusha, meaning Chiradakshay Vishnu, all the avatars, they come through Chiradakshay Vishnu. But Krishna, all the avatars that have been mentioned, they are all coming through Chiradakshay Vishnu. But Krishna, two means but, Krishna, Bhagavan Swayam, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the source of, he is the avatari, he is the source of all avatars. Krishna is that param satyam. And he's been described in these first chapters in great, great majesty. He's all powerful. His expansion, Mahavishnu, Karana Dakshay Vishnu, universes, not universe, not planets, but universes are emanating from the pores of his skin hole. He's vast, he's unlimitedly powerful. With his glance, Sa'aichitam, he injects all the living entities within the material universe, within the Pradhan. He's so powerful. The Vedas are meant to know him. All Shastra is meant to know him. He's all powerful. He's all pervading. He's everything. Then in the fourth chapter, the question is asked by the sages, how did this Bhagavatam become written? So the fourth, fifth, sixth, and the beginning of the seventh chapter of the first canto describe just that, how the Bhagavatam came about, beginning with Srila Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction after compiling all the Vedic literatures, Narada appearing, Narada telling of his own life, and finally, at the beginning of the seventh chapter, there is a description of Srila Vyasadeva following the instructions of his Guru Maharaj, Sri Narada Muni, and him sitting down in meditation, and him having a complete revelation of the Absolute Truth. Him understanding the Absolute Truth, how Maya is completely separate and under Krishna's control. This is so important to understand. Because as we read the Bhagavatam, as we progress from the first canto to the tenth canto, this absolute truth,
Yaya samahito jiva atmanam atmanam propi manyute narta tat, no, I jump verses. Tat kritam tap chip.
How Maya is completely under the control of Krishna, just like the prison house keeper is under the control of the king. But who does the prison house keeper control? The prisoners. And the jivas are tightly caught by that Maya. How caught the jivas are by that Maya, we cannot even estimate at this point how much we are entrapped by Maya. We cannot, practically speaking, understand, because Maya gives us ahankara vamudatma kartaham iti manyate. We're thinking we're doing everything ourselves. But actually, Maya is the cause in this world of our activities, the way we think, how we move our bodies. Without the sanction of Krishna, of course, and without the workings of Maya, I could not move my hand, I could not see, I could not be desiring this and that, I could not make the attempt to attain those desires. This is all under the influence of Maya. And of course, again, as the prison housekeeper is under the influence of the king, so similarly, Maya is completely controlled by the Supreme Lord, and that is Krishna. So Vyasadeva taught that Shastra to whom? His son, Sukadeva Goswami. And then further questions, the topic shifts. That takes us to the seventh chapter of the first canto. And then the topic shifts, because the question has been asked by Shonaka Rishi, how this Bhagavatam came to be spoken, so that topic continues. And before we hear in the later chapters of the first canto about the cursing of Sukadev, of Maharaj Prickett, and the coming of Sukadev, which is the immediate cause of the Bhagavatam being spoken, there has to be other pastimes spoken of, so that pastime is placed in a context and it makes sense. So in the beginning of the seventh chapter, Krishna, we can say, is going to introduce himself. We've heard about majestic, all-powerful Krishna, and now he is going to enter on the stage of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is he going to be doing? How does he choose to present himself? What is it going to be? Will he be sitting on the great, great throne of Vaikuntha? So we all get the point very clearly that we are tiny and insignificant, and that he is all powerful, and if we don't surrender to him and do exactly as he wants, we're going to suffer, which is the essential experience in the material world. So many plans, so many desires, and so many results that were not desired, and trying to push those away to get through the tangle of the material world so we can finally get that thing that we are imagining is going to make us happy, rather get those things that we're imagining is going to make us happy, and just struggling and pushing this person out of the way. He's the one who's stopping me from being, and getting this object, pulling and pushing and pulling and pushing. Are we going to see that Krishna? Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sa characharan, who everything is working, Maya adiaksha is working under his control. No, that is not how Krishna is going to present himself. Let's hear. This is the first verse in the section. I shall now, this is text 12, Sutta is speaking to the sages. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities, and deliverance of Maharaj Parikshit, the sage amongst kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order of the sons of Pandu. This is basically the first canto. He's going to begin it. And here is Krishna's introduction, or our introduction to Krishna. When the respective warriors, it begins after the battle of Kurukshetra, when the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtain their deserved destination, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasen, the son of Dronacharya, whose name was Ashwatthama, he beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, and he took those heads and he delivered them as a prize to his master, Duryodhana, foolishly thinking that Duryodhana would be pleased. Duryodhana, however, was disapproved of this terrible, heinous act. He was not pleased in the least. Have we met Krishna yet? Not yet. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing the massacre of her sons, she began to cry in distress with eyes full of, trying to pacify her in her great loss. Draupadi had suffered so much. And now the jewels of her life, these five sons of her, they had been beheaded cruelly for no purpose. And trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus. Have we been introduced to Krishna yet? Only indirectly, because again, Krishna, he's pulling the strings of everything. But no, we haven't. So Arjuna speaks bold Kshatriya words to satisfy Draupadi, who is truly has a Kshatriya temperament. O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahmana, Ashwatthama, beheading him with the arrows from Gandiva, then I will not try to satisfy you and remove your tears now. We will get our revenge. And I will bring you his head. And then I shall wipe the tears from your eyes. And only then will I pacify you. And then, after burning your sons' bodies, you can take the avibhritya snan while standing upon his head. Kshatriyas, what can be said? The aggressor will be killed. Have we met Krishna yet? No. So Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord, now we're getting to meet Krishna, as friend and chariot driver, as Parthasarathi, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Then Arjuna, dressed in his armor, armed himself with terrible and furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, He set out to follow Aswatthama, the son of his marshal, his military teacher. So we've just got a glimpse so far. The first hint of Krishna is coming here. And then Aswatthama, the murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, he fled in his chariot, panic-stricken. Why was he terrified? He knew, and after he lost, he had done something so terrible, he fled in fear of his life. We may think ourselves very brave, but even it happens if you stand on top of a tall building. I don't know if you have had that experience. You stand on top of a tall building and you look down. Has anyone ever made this scientific experiment? No. But you will feel terror in your stomach. Terror. This is the chakra of Krishna. It is very easy to speak brave words, but when we are confronted with death, terror enters us, our hearts. And then our brave words, meaningless. Our intellectual plans, meaningless. Where our true shelter is, if it is an actual shelter, if our ashraya is Krishna, that is the only protection, in fact. Aswatthama, having fought in the battle, was terrified and in great panic. Just to save his life, he fled from Arjuna, just as Brahma fled from Lord Shiva. So when the son of the Brahmana, Aswatthama, saw that his horses were tired, he considered there was no alternative for protection outside of using his ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra. Have we met Krishna directly yet? No. Since his life was in danger, he touched water and sanctity. He did Achman. And he concentrated upon the chanting of the hymns, the mantras, for throwing this ultimate weapon. It is Brahmastra. Brahma means greatest. Astra, the greatest weapon. It's also called Brahmashira, the head of Lord Brahma, the topmost position of Lord Brahma. So powerful. There is nothing that one can do, practically speaking, to counteract this weapon. So he began to chant it out of the terror in his heart, even though he did not know how to withdraw such weapon. He had been incompletely instructed by his father, because part of the complete instruction is how to throw the weapon and also how to retract it. Arjuna had gotten that. Aswatthama became envious. His father knew that the boy was not qualified, in fact. But when the son is asking, give me, the father must. So he gave him partial knowledge of the weapon. And at this time, Aswatthama shot that. Have we seen Krishna yet? No. Thereupon, a glaring light spread in all directions. The Brahmastra had been released. It was so fierce that Arjuna thought his own life in danger. And then, now we're going to see Krishna. And then he addressed Lord Sri Krishna. Now, what was this visualize in your mind the scene. What was only indirectly spoken. Arjuna was chasing Aswatthama, vowing to come back with his head. And Arjuna was armed with his bow, Gandiva, and his arrows. But who was driving his chariot? It was the Absolute Truth, the Param Satyam, Mama Angso Tejasambhava, the all-powerful Supreme Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, the source of all the Purusha avatars and all the avatars that are mentioned in the third chapter of the Bhagavatam, including Parsaram, Lord Ram, Matsya Korma, Nisringadev. They are all coming through his expansion, Chiradakshay Vishnu. And what is he doing? He's driving again. He's chosen to introduce himself in this way. He's driving the chariot of his devotee. He's serving his devotee. This is God. But not only driving the chariot, at this point, Arjuna's life is threatened. So his first words to that Supreme Lord who is driving his chariot, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam Abhayankara. Almighty Arm Krishna. We could say unlimitedly mighty Arm Krishna, because Krishna is unlimitedly mighty. He has unlimited power. Think about what that means. He's unlimitedly powerful as Mahavishnu, the universes emanate from him. But that is not unlimitedly powerful. That is just a small part of unlimited power. There is no end or limit to Krishna's power. And there he is, driving the chariot and hearing the words of fearful Arjuna. Oh, mighty arm! Oh, unlimitedly mighty arm! You are the one who saves Bhaktyanam Abhyankara. You are the one who saves your devotee from fear. First thing we're hearing about Krishna in this exchange is essential for those of us who want to take full shelter of Krishna in our life and at death. He is unlimitedly powerful and he will save us from fear. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Because in this world, even though we eat, sleep, mate, defend, this defending or fearing is the deepest principle. Everyone in this world is afraid. And where do we go for shelter? We have to know that Krishna is really going to care for us and take care of us fully in the difficult times and in the most difficult times and in the ultimate difficult times, that if we hold on to Krishna, he will indeed give us the shelter that we are looking for. This is not the end of Krishna consciousness. This isn't even bhakti, in fact. This is sharanagati, which is the doorway that we must walk through to begin to love Krishna. And it is the biggest of doorways. It is difficult. It is big in the sense it's easy to walk through. All we have to do is do it. But when we tried to walk through, yes, I am fully surrendered to Krishna, we find it's either the doorway has shrunk, or perhaps our false ego is so big it won't allow us through the door. But how about this problem, and what if this, and what if that? Oh, this false ego is the false ego mind, false intelligence, polluted consciousness. Again, this is the only problem. But Arjuna doesn't have this problem. He's already a devotee, pure devotee, birth after birth. And Krishna is engaging him in this drama so that we learn. We learn what? That Krishna is bhaktanam abhyankaram. That he will save, he will protect us fully if we proportionately, our acharyas have explained, yayatam mam prapadyante, proportionately to how we surrender to him. Oh, this is a very, very, very deep topic. A very deep topic, and the Bhagavatam will illustrate this again and again and again until it reaches in the 10th canto, the Brajabhumi, where the devotees there are so fully surrendered that they don't care about themselves in the slightest bit. They would, Mother Yasoda would die 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times to save Krishna the inconvenience of having one drop of perspiration upon his forehead. We want to go to Vrindavan? Yes, how nice. First we have to walk through the door of Sharanagati. Mahaprabhu has made it easier. Actually, he has made it easy because that Sharanagati isn't even essential to make advancement. All that is essential is that we chant Krishna's names. At this moment, we should chant Krishna's names. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And that, by Mahaprabhu's mercy, will cleanse the heart. And what will be cleansed? All the anartas, cheto darpanam arjanam. Slowly or quickly, depending upon how much we chant, and if we are, even if we don't have faith, Srila Rupa Goswami has described, faith isn't even required, but only one thing is required, and that is no aparads. One little, just like sometimes we read when you go to buy something, they're giving away a big, big car. All you have to do is fill out this coupon, and then in little print it says, conditions apply. So the one condition that applies is no aparads, no offending the holy name. Very serious, the nam aparads. So Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam Abhyankara. You eradicate, Prabhupada's word by word, you eradicate the fears of your devotee because you give them full shelter. Tameko dayamananam apavargo asi samsriti. Here is Prabhupada's translation. Arjuna said, O my Lord Sri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees because you have Nijasarva Shakti, Bahudha, Nijasarva Shakti. You have unlimitedly powerful energies. And therefore, a devotee is one, a Vaishnava is one who has taken shelter of Krishna fully. So you alone are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material miseries. Oh, what an analogy. The flames. We say, samsara davana lalita loka pranaya karuna kana kanatam. Samsara dava nalalita loka. This material world is a forest fire. I don't know if any of you have had major experiences with fire. Has anyone been very heavily burned by fire? You've seen?
Yeah.
It's heavy. And just imagine to be surrounded by a forest fire. And it's consuming. It's on this side. It's on that side. It's on this side. It's everywhere. And you're in the middle. And it's burning closer to you. In Vrindavan, have you been? Who, raise your hand if you've been to Dhavanalakund. Yes. It used to be easy to get to from Krishna Balaram Mandir. Now it's more difficult. Used to be able to walk through an ashram, and now they've made a gate, they've closed up the door, and you have to walk by the railway tracks of where the Radharani Express runs. So, Dhavanalakund, the place where Krishna swallowed the forest fire, because after Krishna killed Kaliya, chastised Kaliya, a forest fire came. Some authorities say that forest fire was started by Kamsa. Just after the Vrijbasis were in complete distress. Who can imagine everything, as we're saying, their whole life, everything was Krishna. They did not know anything else but Krishna. Their consciousness, their words, their deeds, it was simply Krishna, Krishna. It was full love. And they had watched Krishna for one muhurta, 48 minutes, being in the grips of this heavy, powerful, poisonous Kaliya. They were in complete anxiety. They were fainting. The Mother Yasoda stayed alive simply by the other Matajis just talking about Krishna, pouring the nectar of Krishna Katha in her ear continuously. She was trying to run into the water to save Krishna. But only her fainting stopped her. Her legs gave out. Her consciousness disappeared. Saved her from entering the water. And when Krishna understood the distress of the residents in Vrindavan, the all-knowing personality of Godhead, it took him 48 minutes to understand the distress of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna's leelas are very mysterious. And if we ever get to Kunti Devi, she will say this. She will say it. They're completely mysterious how Krishna deals with his devotees. How he does it, why he does it. In the ninth chapter, Bhishma will speak this in the most wonderful way. No one can understand the mind and plans of Krishna. But the devotees don't need to understand because they've already given everything to Krishna. Understanding is not an issue. They may understand, they may not understand, But they have already been purchased by Krishna. Gotripte varanam tata, like a goat, like an animal, is purchased by the owner and kept on a rope. And if he feeds him, if he doesn't feed him, no question of him going anywhere. When Prabhupada very kindly, out of his mercy, initiated me, he said that these are like a dog collar. And when Prabhupada would say something, you think, oh, these are like a dog collar. How nice, how wonderful. And he said, the dog has one good quality, because Prabhupada's usual relationship with dogs was criticizing them. In Hong Kong one time, we were walking on the peak on this little mountain on top in Hong Kong, and a dog started running over to us, with us meaning Srila Prabhupada and us devotees who were with him. And a big German shepherd, and you know, with his tongue hanging out and all the saliva coming out. And it looked like he was very happy to see Prabhupada. So he was going to put his paws on Prabhupada's saffron cloth and maybe even, out of his affection, give him a big lick or something like that. So the owner became an anxiety. So he, come back. And the dog didn't come right up to us. But then he went back to the owner, and the owner took him and petted him and said, good dog, good dog, good dog. And Prabhupada just looked at us and said, good? That's all he said. So Prabhupada's usual relationship with the dogs wasn't appreciating their qualities, but he said they have one good quality. They are loyal to their master. And that, I have proved myself not to be such a very good dog, but he said that. And then I saw in Vrindavan, because outside of, I live on, above Vrajabihari's house, and they have their dogs there downstairs, outside, keeping away whoever they decide to bark at. And I watch these dogs. I have studied now, deeply studied the psychology of dogs. Once they say, I am your dog, I am your dog, they attach themselves to you. You are my master. They don't leave. I have watched them. Vrajabihari Prabhu, out of his kindness, he kicks them. Excuse, don't tell him, I'm telling on him. He pets them with his feet, with his shoes on. Sometimes they feed them very luxuriantly, sometimes they don't. And the dogs sometimes complain. You can hear them outside. Oh, 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 I want more food. And then when they leave, especially with Vrajabihari Prabhu's son Gopinath, when they leave, especially when all three of them leave, the dogs come to the gate and they cry and cry and cry. They don't like to be alone, bereft of their master. They complain like anything, but they never leave. So I decided complaining is allowed if these are my dog collar. But leaving is not allowed. I have studied. Bishbazi dogs are very special tattva. You do anything. If you pick up a rock, the dogs are coming to pick up a rock, and you throw it, and you may miss them by, never mind this, by 100 feet or 100 yards. You may throw it and miss them, and they'll still go, to make everyone feel sorry for them. So the dog has accepted his master. And for the devotees to actually become devotees and to fully take shelter of their master, we need to understand this deeply, that everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation, freedom, apavarga, freedom from the miseries of material life in you alone. Because nivasarva shakti, you have unlimited power. So who is worthy of taking shelter, being taken shelter of other than Krishna? So Aswatthama continues. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creation and who is transcendental to material energy. And you have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. This was again, this was Srila Vyasadeva's realization that Krishna is beyond the material energy. So again, the first thing Arjuna is doing is glorifying Krishna's transcendental position as all-powerful, beyond the material world. It is essential that we understand these things, first to take shelter of Krishna, and then to understand that everything that he does, regardless of what it looks like, and we're going to especially need this understanding completely implanted deeply and fully in our hearts when we reach the 10th canto, because then Krishna is going to enact his Naralila, his human-like pastimes. But we should never think that they are the pastimes or activities of a human being. This is Krishna interacting with his most intimate, deep devotees. So we need to read these cantos to get all the purification in place and all the proper conceptions in place of who Krishna is, what his position is. And then when we read the 10th canto, we'll understand the most incredible, wondrous thing of this is Krishna dealing with his most intimate, trusted devotees, exchanging rasa and making their rasa explode into an ocean of ecstasy, surpassing, amazingly enough, his own ecstasies. This is what Krishna wants to benedict the tiny, insignificant jiva soul with. This is what Mahaprabhu came to give. Unata udara rasam bhaktin sriyam. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj in Adi Leela, he says, he's saying Krishna's mind, he's revealing Krishna's mind. Those who think that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally, they do not understand my brother. This is what Krishna wants to give. You are always situated, Arjuna continues, you're always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. You are not affected by the material world at all. And yet, so first Arjuna is speaking tattva. And yet, although you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you are beyond the limitations of the extent of the material energy. You execute the four principles of liberation characterized by Dharma, religion, and so forth for the ultimate good of the conditioned soul. And you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees, and are completely focused, wrapped in meditation on you because of their love. You descend to benefit those devotees. O Lord of Lords, and Arjuna is saying, you've come, O all-powerful one, to protect your devotees, Bhaktanam Abhyankara. And here I am, at this point, with a brahmastra shot by Aswatthama. It is racing towards me. Will you protect me? O all-powerful Lord, who's come to save all religious principles, who are transcendental, will you protect me, your devotee, who has given up focusing his mind on anything else and is simply thinking about you and your pleasure, O Lord? O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. Now here, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, again, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Krishna is going to speak. And in fact, the words that he speaks here and in the next verse, two verses, are the only words he's going to speak. He tells directly, they're indirect hints he gives, and things that he'll say. No, he does speak other things. But look what he's going to say here. Oh, excuse me. I should look what he's going to say, and you should listen to what he's going to say. Is he going to explain his position as the Supreme Lord? No. He's going to simply give practical advice how Arjuna can save himself. Know from me, Krishna says, that this is the act of the son of Drona, Asatama. He has thrown the hymns of nuclear energy, Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death. Not only is Krishna all-powerful, but he's also omniscient. He's all-knowing. Because if someone's all-powerful and doesn't know everything, he may make a mistake now and then. But Krishna knows everything as well. He is the perfect person for us to surrender to give ourselves to be wrapped in meditation upon. Only, O Arjuna, only another brahmastra can counteract this weapon. And since you are expert in the military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon. This is our introduction to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, protecting his devotee from fear, serving his devotee by driving his chariot, and giving practical advice and instructions how Arjuna can be saved from this impossible situation. So then Arjuna, following what Krishna says, he shoots his own brahmastra, and then when that brahmastra combines with Asatthama's brahmastra, then Arjuna withdraws his brahmastra, because he knows how to do that. And with doing that, he withdraws the brahmastra of Aswatthama. And then Arjuna ties up Aswatthama. He captures him, because Aswatthama is helpless before enraged Arjuna. He captures him. And what does Krishna advise him immediately? Kill him. Kill him. Now we already know that Krishna is very tricky. Let's read forward. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper. He arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. Krishna said, Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. A cruel, and then he describes so many other reasons. You should kill him immediately. Don't become soft-hearted because he is the son of your teacher. He has done the most horrible things. And more than that, I have heard you promise, Draupadi, that you would bring forward his head. He's an assassin, a murderer of your family members. He's dissatisfied, Duryodhana. He is not a true son of Dronacharya. Kill him immediately. Then Arjuna, with Krishna driving the chariot, brought Asatthama, bound by ropes, like an animal. This illustrious, the son of an illustrious great Brahmana warrior, was bound like an animal, humiliated in that way, and brought him before Draupadi and the other Pandavas. And Draupadi immediately showed him respects as a Brahmana, as the son of the teacher. And then she said, release him. Immediately she said, release him. It is by Dronacharya's mercy that you learn the military arts, how to control weapons, and I don't want the wife of Dronacharya, this boy's mother, to be heartbroken and crying by the death of her son, as I am now heartbroken and crying. We should show respect to the Brahmins. So in this way, Draupadi gave so many reasons. And when these reasons were explained, Yudhisthira has no enemy and no envy. He immediately agreed, because these were all in accordance with the principles of religion. And there are actually, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, those, the 6 verses or so that she says, each one of those verses exemplifies one of the points that are made in this verse where that Yudhisthira agrees, because they were full of mercy, equity, free from duplicity. Nakul and Sahadev. So far, Krishna has said, kill him. Draupadi has said, release him. Nakul and Sahadev. Yudhisthira has said, release him. Satyaki. So Nakul and Sahadev, Satyaki, Arjun, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, the son of Devaki, and all the ladies also agreed with the king to release him. So Krishna before, kill him immediately. Now Krishna has moved his side onto this side. He's agreeing. And who doesn't agree? Bhim. He disagreed with them. He recommended killing the culprit who in an angry mood had murdered the sleeping children. Chaturbhuja. Now Krishna is two arm. But Chaturbhuja, it describes that he took two arms to hold the different parties apart. Each, that's four arms, two arms for each. So Krishna is now, he will resolve a family dispute. He says to Arjuna, a friend of a Brahmana is not to be killed. But if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. All the rulings are in the scriptures, and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to Draupadi, your wife. And you must also act to the satisfaction of Bhimasena and me.
So Krishna has gone back into the other side at this point.
So he's examining Arjuna's understanding of what religion actually is. What are the principles of religion? And what is the highest principle of religion? He's already told Arjuna, Sarvada mam prityaja, mamekam sharanam braja. This is the highest principle of religion. Because this is Sharanagati, and this is the doorway to bhakti, that Krishna must be pleased. This is the most important point in our life, that we must please Krishna. So Arjuna becomes inspired by Krishna, because Krishna is in everyone's heart, and he gives them the proper understanding of what to do. By his equivocal orders, Krishna has taken both sides, kill him and not kill him. And with his sword, he cut the hair and the jewel that was embedded in Aswatthama's body or something like that. And they drove Aswatthama from the camp. And in this way, they killed him, they defamed him. And in this way, they killed him, but not killed him simultaneously. And finally, the last word in this sloka, in this chapter, cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative, a Brahma Bandhu. There is no injunction for killing the body. So Arjuna, he got exactly the right thing to do by Krishna's perfect inspiration. So the first time we see Krishna is serving his devotee. And that is what we're going to see throughout these chapters. Our first introduction to Krishna. In very mysterious ways and in wonderful ways, Krishna is going to simply serve his devotees, protect his devotees. So and we're not going to see Krishna personally. Of course, in the third canto, Uddhava speaks some verses summarizing Krishna's pastimes. But after that, we're not going to see Krishna until the 10th canto. So these are very, very, very intimate and important instructions by Krishna, or rather by Srila Vyasadeva, because these are our first introduction to Krishna. First introductions are very important. The impressions are given at that time. So how does Krishna introduce himself? As Bhakta Vatsal. I would like to go a little further because the next thing that happens, of course, the next pastime is in the eighth chapter, and that eighth chapter is practically divided into three different parts. The first part is Krishna's dealing, or we could say even four parts. Krishna's dealing with the devotees dealing with the aftermath of the Battle of Kurukshetra. Because everyone has been killed and everyone is lamenting. And Yudhisthira is now installed as the king. And he's performed Aswamedha's sacrifices. So you can say that's the first part. And Krishna at every point is instrumental in this, because he's dealing with his devotees. And then, I'll read. Krishna has finished his business. He's been away from Dwarka for a very long time. And now he mounts his chariot. his own chariot with his own chariot driver, who is Daruka. He mounts his chariot to leave, because when Krishna is away from Dwarka, all the residents of Dwarka are crying. And when Krishna is in Hastinapur, all the residents of Hastinapur are in ecstasy, happy, laughing. They see him every day. All beautiful Krishna, they see him every day. But now, it's going to reverse. Krishna is leaving Hastinapur, and the time for the residents of Hastinapur to cry is coming up, and it's time for the residents of Dwarka to regain their lives, because Krishna is again returning. So Krishna mounts the chariot, and suddenly there is another catastrophe, because Krishna has seen, he's done his work. Duryodhana is not the king. He's installed righteousness personified, Maharaj Yudhisthira on the throne. After all the suffering that the Pandavas went through, now, and Krishna stayed with them continuously the entire time. He never left them alone through all their sufferings. And now Yudhisthira is finally the king again, properly. The burden of the earth, practically speaking, has been lifted. Righteousness personified, Dharma is the king, ruling. Now he's leaving. He mounts his chariot. And as soon, this is text 8 in the 8th chapter, as Krishna seated himself on the chariot to start for Dwarka, he saw Uttara running towards him in fear. Uttara is the wife of Abhimanyu. Who was killed so gloriously in the battle of Kurukshetra. And the hope of the Kuru dynasty, the future of the Kuru dynasty, is within her womb. And suddenly, as Krishna seats himself on the chariot to begin going to Dwarka, he saw Uttara running towards him in fear. Pahi, pahi, Mahayogin, O greatest of mystics. Pahi, pahi means protect me, Pahima Mahaprabhu would call out as he traveled as a sannyasi throughout South India. Krishna Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam, Krishna, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam, protect me, save me, protect me. I am yours. I am yours, I am yours. I have no other shelter but you. Pahi, pahi, Mahayogin. I have no other shelter, O greatest of mystics. Deva, deva, jagatpate, O Lord of the universe. Nanyam twad abhayam pashe. Yatra mrityu parasparam. O Lord of Lords, Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mystics. Please protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. This world is the world of duality. Good and bad, icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. We are born into this world thinking this on the material level is good and that is bad and this is good, and if I'm first in class it is good, and if I'm 800th in class, it is bad, it's terrible, and if I'm this and this and this and that and this and that, if I have this and if I don't have that, good and bad, defining good and bad. And this is what occupies, this is specifically the function of the mind, the materialistic mind. Sankalpa vikalpa. I want this, I don't want that. Icha dvesha. It holds on to something. It pushes, it holds on, it pushes. This is what the mind's business is in the material world. Simply that. I want, I hate, I want. And at one moment it wants. And the same thing, 2 seconds later it can hate. This is the wicked mind. And that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, oh Lord, when he's taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna, oh Lord, a wicked mind has brought me into this world. A wicked mind, I want, I hate. And in this way, the wicked mind is occupied in illusion from the time we wake up, of course not for devotees, but until the time we go to sleep. I want, I hate, I want, I hate. This is good, this is bad. Just based on the false ego, protecting a false sense of who I am. This is the world of duality. And this is what we need protection from. And only Krishna can do it. Birth, death. This is the ultimate in the world of duality. Birth is good, death is bad. When you're 1 day old, oh, how cute, how cute, how cute, how cute. When you're 89 years old, no one wants to come near you. As if the 1-year-old doesn't turn into the 5-year-old and doesn't turn into the 35-year-old and the 65-year-old. Such illusion. A baby comes into the world, immediately cries. No one says, welcome to the world of death. Congratulations. Become enamored. And what do? We put our faces in front of the little baby and smile and talk in funny ways. And the baby recognizes first the mother, and then she sees her father, and finally recognizes the father for the first time, and smiles, and then the father's heart just simply melts. She loves me. She loves, hate, loves, hates. This, that, this, that, this, that, this, that. This is the duality that binds us in the material world. So it is Krishna that can save us, and it can give meaning to everything in this material world. In the early days of the movement, Prabhupada used to say, we learn so many zeros. Everything is zeros. And all we have to do is put a one in front of that, and everything has great value. But without the one, without Krishna, it's just an accumulation of zeros. It's a binary world. Just ones and zeros. So Uttara says that, oh my Lord, you are all powerful. A fiery iron arrow is coming towards me fast, my Lord. Let it burn me personally. This is the purity of a mother's love. Let it burn me personally, if you so desire. If you so desire, because I have taken shelter of you. If you so desire. In that, If you so desire, is the message of the whole Bhagavatam. I am yours. Parikshit Maharaj, I want to hear, I'm going to die. I've been cursed to die. Let me die if you so desire. Chitraketu Maharaj, Parvati curses, become a demon. Apitul Yarta Darshanam. If it is the desire of Krishna, let it happen. The dog is barking, but it doesn't leave. It has sold itself to Krishna, to his master. The residents of Vrindavan, Krishna, as we said, he's, you could say tricky, but we don't really mean tricky like chalu. We mean deep. His plan, his thinking is unfathomable. We cannot understand it. The residents of Vrindavan know nothing but Krishna. And he leaves Vrindavan. And do the residents of Vrindavan, do they say, how wonderful, because Varaha Bhav is so sweet, I want to relish separation from Krishna, it is so wonderful. No, they simply cry and remain stunned and exhibit other forms of ecstatic symptoms because their love for Krishna is unfathomably deep. Why Krishna does what he does? We may bark, we may not bark, depending upon our natures. But a devotee does not leave his master. And this is what we're going to see in the Bhagavatam. It doesn't... Oh, this is... When Krishna leaves the rasa dance, he's standing nearby and listening. He's watching the gopis and listening to their words because it's hard to get something from the deepest part of the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. You don't... Because people, it's so easy to say, love you, I love you, on a superficial level. But when you're talking about love that's deep, it doesn't just immediately come out of the mouth. Krishna wants to hear what's in the gopis' hearts. He leaves the rasa dance, and then what's in their heart comes out their mouths, and he hears it. And we hear what it is to become a topmost devotee, what it is to be a top. Otherwise, what do we know about love for Krishna? Without the comments of the acharyas, we don't have access into this from the material world, because in this material world, what is called love is kamendriya priti. It is selfishness. In the Cantonese Chinese language, they say ngo oi chai. I love tea. Oh, I love that new movie. How do you like your vacation? Oh, I loved it. Love, 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 love. But it's only selfish. It's lust, 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 lust. We don't have an idea of what Vrindavan is unless we read the Bhagavatam carefully, read Prabhupada's purports carefully, deeply think about them. Not superficially, but deeply. It gives us something to think about deeply in this world. understand what the gift is of the Bhagavatam. Understand what the gift of the holy name is. The gift of Mahaprabhu, the gift of Srila Prabhupada, the gift of those who understand Prabhupada's gift. And why Prabhupada was so eager to break the foolish materialism of this world, because it stands in the way of what's supposed to be given and taken. Let it burn me personally, if you so desire. If you so desire whatever you desire, for your pleasure I am ready to do anything. Be burnt by a brahmastra, myself. But do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. Sutta Goswami said, having patiently heard her words, Krishna's on the chariot. Lord Sri Krishna, who is always very affectionate to his devotees, we can read this 1,000 times, and I read it 1,000 times. But if we read one parenthetical phrase like this, who is always very affectionate to his devotees, it can change our life. One, not even sentence. It can change our life if we understand the basic principle of reading Prabhupada's books is that this is Prabhupada giving us instructions, and we should take it like that, that here Prabhupada is speaking to me. He's saying to me what he wants to say to me. And I should hear it with an open heart, with an open mind, attentively. So with this simple point, you can pass it by when you read this verse. Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsala Upadarya Vachastasya, Sutta Goswami is saying, Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsala Apandavam Midam Kartum Dronir Astram Abhudyata. Having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsala, who is always very affectionate to his devotees, what is stopping me from becoming a devotee? At this point, it seems very foolish. What is stopping me from giving whatever it is that I have, whatever it is that I am, in devotion to Krishna, giving myself to Krishna, Saranagati? What is stopping me? What am I hoping to gain in the material world? What am I fearful of? It's fear, usually, from my own experience I've seen. What holds me back is fear. Fear what? Which I should ask. What am I afraid of? Is Krishna real? I've heard Prabhupada say on a tape why we don't surrender, as we have doubt that Krishna is actually a person. That he actually is a person who loves his devotees. That he's all power. In other words, what stops us is good old atheism and Mayavad philosophy. Nivasesha Sunyavadi Prashkatya Dezatarani. West means Western India also. Bombay. Will Krishna, if I'm falling, will Krishna actually catch me? We have to hear. And we have to live a life that attracts Krishna's mercy so that He reveals His kindness to us. And I will also say His great tolerance. We have to read carefully. And now He's come. He was listening all along. He knows everything. But He's very, very cute, isn't He? And everyone loves Him. Again, if we want to go there, we have to be ready to be insignificant servants. We already are insignificant servants, but we have to be ready to accept it. If someone is not convinced that they're insignificant, they should try to convince everyone in at least their suburb of Bombay that everyone else should center their lives around him or her. Try. And you will find out that you cannot convince anyone, practically speaking. And this is the curse of materialistic false ego. The curse is we want to be the supreme Ishwaraham, Aham Bhogi, Siddham. We want to be in a world where everything is centered around me. So, okay, you take this materialistic consciousness and live in illusion. And in your illusion, you are the center. This is false ego. And the whole universe is moving around you. And the only point you'll have to accept is that you have to try now to organize the rest of the universe so it works around your false ego, you. And that establishes an Icha Dvesha Samutena. All I have to do to get the universe to center around me is to move this out of the way and move this forward. This moving, shaking, pushing, pulling the material world. And we, from the beginning of our birth, we manipulate the material energy to the moment we're dying. We're leaving the body, and this is what our mission is to end. To give up this concept of I am my body, and all I see is mine, and become servants of the servants, of the servants of Krishna. Krishna wants to serve His devotees. He's Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsala. And I want my own universe. And what happens to everyone? I simply become lonely. Because it's lonely in my own universe. So what do? I invent the computer, and then to make it even better, I invent the video game, the computer game, where I am the one I am in control, as long as you keep putting the money in or whatever. Illusion inside of illusion inside of illusion inside of illusion. We should gain the experience that the world is offering us, and we should hear Shastra. Suffering itself does not bring bhakti. Bhakti comes from the bhakta, from the devotees. So we should hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. Understand reality as it is, the negative and the positive. The material world gives us the negative, but it's the Bhagavatam coming through Srila Prabhupada that gives us the positive, because Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsala Krishna, who is always, always affectionate to his devotees. He could at once understand that Aswatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life in the Pandava family. Oh, foremost amongst the great thinkers, the Munis, Sonaka Rishi, Suta Goswami is speaking, seeing the glaring Brahmastra proceeding towards them, the Pandavas took up their five respective weapons. They were there because Krishna was leaving. Krishna was on the chariot. He was leaving. And then the Almighty, Almighty, Supreme Personality of God. He is Almighty. That means He's all powerful. He has all might. He has all strength. He can do anything, even if it's impossible. And now what's He going to do? Before, He did a little bit. He just told Arjuna what to do and used Arjuna's strength. And then He manifested four arms to keep the parties apart and inspired Arjuna with the proper answer. But now He's going to display a little bit of His almighty power. Having observed that a great danger was befalling His unalloyed devotees. Who were the unalloyed devotees? The Pandavas, Kunti Devi, and one more, Parikshit Maharaj. Even though he's not yet born, he is a great devotee. Who are fully surrendered souls. They were all fully surrendered souls. They were fully surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna's Bhagavan Bhakta Vatsala, He is fully surrendered to them. That is what goes on in the Bhagavatam. That is what goes on in the Vrindavan. They'll do anything for Him. And He becomes defeated by them, Napariyeham, and they will do anything, or He will do anything for them. This is Krishna. God is not... Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said He's the supreme autocrat. What was the word that He used before that? Transcendental autocrat. But He is not actually, because He was explaining on a certain level. Or you could say His autocracy makes Him surrendered to His devotees. That kind of a God who is there sitting on His throne. You have done evil. You have done good. Oh, excuse me. Roses and flowers. Roses with no thorns and carob ice cream only. And you, I'm not sure about you yet. I'm watching carefully. No. That is samoham savabhuteshu name vesho stinapriya. But Krishna is ye bhajanti tumam bhaktyam mayate teshu sapyam. I'm living in my devotees. I'm living in them. What forces Krishna to live within His devotees' heart? The love of His devotees attracts them. And the devotees, on the other hand, they are living in Krishna. They see nothing but Krishna and Krishna's mercy. It's not easy to be a devotee, actually. It's the most difficult thing, because one has to give up one's false ego. But Mahaprabhu makes it easy. He gives prema easily by this chanting, by the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Mahan. This is the great explanation of the absolute truth. So he at once, immediately took up his Sudarshan Chakra, Svanam, his to protect his own devotees. Raksham Vyadad Vibhu, the Vibhu, the all-powerful one, immediately wanted to protect them without delay. And the Lord of Supreme Mysticism, because he's going to do something mystical here, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma, as such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, Prickett Maharaj. He covered the embryo of Uttara by his personal energy, by his mystic powers. So this is an important point. And we have you have been very patiently listening. Just two more verses. So Krishna, and this will be described a little later, because we're hearing it now from the point of view of Suta Goswami, but later we're going to hear what Maharaj Parikit within the womb saw. He saw the Lord with his reddish eyes because he was angry, swirling his club in anger because his devotee was being threatened. He was protecting Parikit Maharaj. But at the same time, he's sitting on the chariot protecting the Pandavas with his Sudarshan Chakra. So he's outside. Everyone's seeing that. But Kunti Devi, who is soon going to speak, she has been given the ability by Krishna's mercy to see Krishna outside protecting the Pandavas and inside protecting Parikit Maharaj in the womb. Krishna, Krishna, antarbahira vastita. I've seen you in both places. Quite wonderful, O master of mystic powers, which is how Uttara glorified Krishna. So he protected Uttara by his personal energy. Some of the acharyas said Maharaj Parikit's body was burnt and he gave him a new body. It's there in one of the purports. So although, Suta Goswami continues, O Shonaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Aswatthama was irresistible, sometimes we're in danger in this world that seems like it's impossible to get out of that danger. The Brahmastra was irresistible. It could not be checked or stopped. It could not be counteracted. But it was neutralized, stopped, and foiled when confronted by the strength of Krishna. So therefore, it is only a devotee who has placed himself fully in the hands of Krishna who can be fearless in this world, because he's not in this world. He is in Krishna's hands. O Brahmanas, so this is quite amazing. Krishna went into two. But Sutta says, Mamamsta yetad ascharyam. What does ascharya mean? Ascharya vat? Ascharja. Chamatkar. This is astounding, wonderful. Ma means do not. Mamsta, do not think, Suta Goswami says to the rishis. He etad ascharyam. Do not think this is wonderful. Sarvascharyamaye achyuta. Because achyuta is all wonderful. He's all powerful, all wonderful. Don't think that this is the extent of his potency, and if you're in a different difficult situation, he won't be able to protect. No. Ya idam mayaya devya shrijat avati hantyaja. O Brahmanas, do not think this to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious. This is how Prabhupada translates it. Mysterious. Infallible. He does not fall down. Achyuta. He does not come down from his position of bhaktavatsalya. He will not suddenly become selfish or reject. He does not fall down from his position as bhaktavatsalya. He's very mysterious. He's most mysterious. He's all mysterious. And yet, Bhagavan Bhaktivatsalya. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains, he annihilates all material things, although he himself is unborn. Thus saved from the radiation of the Brahmastra, Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord, she's a chaste devotee. She only was focused on Krishna. Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord, and her five sons, and Draupadi, they addressed the Lord as he started for home. So he was ready to leave again. He was on the chariot, ready to leave. But a catastrophe occurred with the Brahmastra. So he dealt with that in his own amazing mystical way. And now he again was ready to leave. Let's read what Prabhupada says about in his purport about Kunti. And then we'll be able to stop. And the next verse is Kunti's first prayer. Srila Prabhupada's words. Kunti is described here as sati, or chaste, due to her unalloyed devotion to Lord Sri Krishna. Pure devotion. Her mind will now be expressed in the following prayers for Lord Krishna. A chaste devotee of the Lord does not look to others, namely any other living being or demigod, even from deliverance from danger. This world is a dangerous place. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Certified, dangerous. But the devotees look only to Krishna for protection. Krishna, amongst included in Krishna, and this is those who are dear to Krishna. Even from deliverance from danger, that was all along the characteristic of the whole family of the Pandavas. They knew nothing except Krishna. And therefore the Lord was also always ready to help them in all respects and in all circumstances. Remember, Prabhupada is speaking this for me. These words but they should enter my heart as Prabhupada telling me, instructing me on what I need in my Krishna consciousness. They knew nothing except Krishna, and therefore the Lord was also always ready to help them in all respects and in all circumstances. That is the transcendental nature of the Lord. He reciprocates the dependence of the devotee. One should not, therefore, look for help from imperfect living beings or demigods. But one should look for all help from Lord Krishna, who is competent to save his devotees. Such a chaste devotee also never asks the Lord for help. But the Lord, because if you desire, but the Lord, out of his own accord, is always anxious to render it, to render help for his devotee. So we may think, oh, this is for the great devotees like Kunti Devi, like the Pandavas, like so many exalted devotees. But I'm so mixed and mixed up. So many desires, so many doubts. Will Krishna really protect me? And the answer is yes. Because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj, he quotes a verse from Lord Ramachandra when Bibhishan came. And everyone was afraid that Bibhishan had come. Why should we give him shelter? And Lord Ramachandra says, does anyone know that verse? Loudly, please. Translation. Please, you know the English. If one, I'll repeat it. If you say it, I'll repeat it. If someone comes to me even once and says that I am yours, I shall award him with fearlessness. I have taken this as my vow. And with the Pandavas themselves, when Draupadi was in so much difficulty, she was holding on and she was calling out and she was holding on and she was calling out. And she was holding on to the sari and calling out. And finally she could hold on no longer. And she only called out, Hey Govinda, Hey Gopinath, Hey Shyamasunda. But with a full heart and full taking shelter. And Krishna, as we read in Nectar of Devotion, quoting from somewhere, he says, I cannot get those words of Draupadi out of my mind, and I remain forever in her debt for calling out with such full-hearted feeling. If one time, and other acharyas have spoken like this, if one person, one soul, one time sincerely calls out to Krishna, chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one time, sincerely, oh Krishna, please accept me. Prabhupada translated it in that way sometimes. Or please engage me in your service. Oh Krishna, oh Srimati Radharani, oh Hari, oh Krishna, oh Sri Radhika Raman. One time, please, I am yours. Krishna never forgets and will never let that soul go. Now, if there was ever an introduction to chant one Maha Mantra, this is it. So let us please, wait, no, first, let's before just going for the loudness that will allow His Holiness Radhanath Swami to hear us in Karpantariya, let's also go remember the mood that will allow Maharaj to hear also, and also Gopinath. I am yours. Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! 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 Hare Hare! Hare Rama! Hare Rama! Rama Rama! Hare Hare! Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. That was so loud and so sweet.